In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's been a tough semester for Iowa college students, the first full semester coping with the COVID pandemic. This hour, we want to hear a variety of views on how well it went and what may be in store for 2021. In just a few minutes, we'll hear from two students, one from Iowa State University who moved off campus to be safer, and one from the University of Iowa who became infected with COVID-19. In the second half hour, I'll talk with the president of Cornell College, Jonathan Brand, about how that private college's alternative one-class-at-a-time approach worked in an uncertain pandemic environment. Also a perspective from Carissa Froyum at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. But first, let's get a broad overview of the COVID semester that was from Vanessa Miller, higher education reporter with the Gazette. Vanessa, welcome back to the program.
Thanks.
So universities, depending on where you are, colleges, they're wrapping up now in different ways. Broadly speaking, let's focus on the three public universities, ISU, UNI, and UI. How did we see case levels, responses? What kind of data can we have at hand to compare how the universities did this semester?
Well, yeah, all three really started the semester with their highest case numbers. It's a little hard to know whether that's because students brought the virus with them to campus or whether it was because there was sort of this normal bar activity right at the start of the semester. I think maybe the students didn't quite realize how actually different this experience would be this fall. And so all of them saw sort of hundreds of new cases right away in the first week or so, even before classes started for the University of Iowa. So the campuses had to crack down a little bit and really urge folks to be vigilant. I think the governor's bar closure helped them with that. And so then cases sort of stabilized. They dropped quite a bit and then stabilized even into the single or teens, you know, by week, and stayed there until they sort of surged again in November, but not quite as high as they did back in the fall. In terms of reporting and information, Iowa State by far has sort of provided the most information. They have a pretty robust COVID dashboard with all sorts of helpful numbers in broken down in different categories by students, faculty, staff, quarantine, isolation, on-campus, off-campus testing, bar graphs, mm-hmm. everything. University of Iowa has mostly reported just like six basic numbers, so like new cases, semester to date for employees and students, and then quarantine and isolation. Then UNI is a little bit in the middle, just reporting student health center cases, positivity rates, and then those reported through a Panther Health survey, which can include off-campus cases, but it could include both. So a little bit harder to know the total number there, but yes, I mean, their campus stuff has sort of mirrored the state trends as well.
Right. How did restrictions at the three universities change from what you can tell over the semester as we saw the number of infections change and that, you know, that spike we had starting at the beginning of November, the dramatic rise, and unlike previous ones that did not center on the public university counties, it really was a nationwide and a statewide surge that we saw.
Yeah, I mean, they did have to crack down, like I said. They sent out, like, President Winterstein on Iowa State's campus sent out a message really, really kind of berating students at the start of the semester when all of these images of parties off campus and bars were circulating on social media saying, you guys have to stop this. Like, this is serious. We're going to have to call the semester. If you want in-person education at all, you've got to get in line. And so they did, and they do all sort of made students sign these student accountability agreements. And so many said, you know, they started the semester with it being mostly educational, but then did start to take reports and go through with some disciplinary action. So did start to take it much more seriously. And I think students did as well. So, right. I mean, I think they ramped it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. When we look at the university's enrollment, their level of a residence hall occupation there, how does that look? How big is the dent in the university in terms of the business they had from students?
Yeah, well, enrollment definitely dipped. The Regents put out a pretty comprehensive report. So they saw decreases on all three of the campuses. I think collectively it was about a 4% drop, but they all saw drops. University of Iowa and Iowa State, just to start the semester, like Iowa State's freshman enrollment dropped 10% to start this year. And so did University of Iowa, now that I look at it. So those enrollment numbers started off the year down, and their residence hall numbers were started the year off too. So UI occupancy, for example, fell about 18% from last semester to this semester. And then they additionally saw more withdrawals. So like on the University of Iowa, they saw about 301 students withdraw within the first 9 weeks compared to 243 last year. And then they also saw a significant number of students who canceled their housing contracts. So again, for the University of Iowa, about 886 students canceled their housing contracts between August 1st and October 20th. Mm-hmm. And so compared with that same time period last year, it was 171. So that's a pretty big dip. And Iowa State saw like a 7.8% number, like percentage of housing contract cancellation. So yeah, they all took a hit, and that of course, you know, affects the budget. So the housing divisions are all independently financed, you know, and that obviously is a problem and something they're all having to address going forward.
Right. In the final minute or two, Vanessa, what do you see when we look forward to the coming months and the spring semester?
Right. Well, in the spring, they all are doing the hybrid model like they did in the fall. And for like UI, about like 76% of the classes were actually taught online. So, and it was less for Iowa State and UNI. So we're going to do that similarly. They're starting a little bit later, January 25th, and all three of them have eliminated spring break to try to curtail any sort of travel and hazards with those. But I think everybody's just hopeful that maybe the vaccinations help ease things up a little bit. They've all talked about distribution. So yeah, I think there's a little more hope there, but they're hoping also it looks a little similar to this semester in terms of the hybrid experience.
Mm-hmm. And in the last few seconds, tuition. There's been a tuition freeze at the public universities. Of course, the big controversy, if we're just learning online, do we have to pay the full tuition? What's the forecast there?
Yeah, well, they were questioning whether they would increase it again for the spring, and they decided to keep it frozen, so around the 8,000 mark at UI and ISU for resident undergraduate students. They're going to keep it frozen for the spring, like I said, but next fall they'll return to this stepped increase, their five-year tuition model, where everybody has sort of line of sight to the increases, which are, you know, between 3% and 5% annually. So that will return next fall, they say, because they need the revenue. They're struggling. Obviously, the state isn't like, you know, giving them all of the money that they've requested or hasn't in recent years. So anyway, those numbers will go up after this spring semester.
Okay. Thanks for keeping us up to date. Vanessa Miller, higher education reporter with the Gazette. We appreciate it, Vanessa. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, at the close of the academic semester, we're getting a sense of what attending college has been like during this pandemic year. Hannah Neary is with us. She's a junior from Des Moines, attending the University of Iowa in Iowa City. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
I understand you tested positive for COVID in the summer while you were taking a class. Tell us about that. When did you first notice symptoms?
Yeah. So it was the week after Father's Day this year, and I just started getting like a bit of a sore throat and a cough, and was just super tired. So I was a little bit concerned because I never get sick in the summertime. Mm-hmm. Kind of that week it progressed on, and I finally got tested the next weekend.
Mm-hmm. When you first got those first symptoms, I bet it sprang to your head that this might be COVID or not.
Right. Yep. And I was at home visiting my family for Father's Day, and then I started getting these symptoms, and I lived in Iowa City, so I came back here, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I was like worried. I gave it to my family.
And did that turn out to be the case?
No, it didn't. Good. I did not give it to anyone.
Very good. How severe were your symptoms?
I would say they were like moderate. I definitely had the symptoms, and I had a pretty gnarly cough. That was probably the worst part. But I wasn't severely sick. I never had to go to the hospital or anything. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
How easy was it to get tested, Hannah?
It was a little bit tricky. My first test was through Test Iowa. It's like the drive-through one, and it hurts super bad. And yep. Then you don't get your results for like 3 days. And then so I did that week, and I got an email 2 days later, and they were like, your results were inconclusive. So I was a little bit frustrated. So I ended up calling the university hospitals and was finally able to get in through there. And they got me my results back in 6 hours that Sunday.
And it was a positive result.
It was a little tricky.
Yeah, so it was a positive result. And I understand you live in an apartment with several other students. So that complicated matters, didn't it? Did you quarantine there in the apartment?
Yeah. So there were five of us. It's a five-person apartment, but, still a pretty small space. Me and one of my other friends tested positive, but then the three other girls I was living with tested negative, which was weird.
Yeah. So you tried to just keep to your rooms. You wore masks inside and were just really keeping things sanitary.
Right. Yep. Yeah. That's about all we could do at that point.
Okay. So, tell us a little bit, Hannah, about the mindset of students there at the University of Iowa when you, you were there in the spring through the summer into the fall. How are most students handling this? Worried, not worried, anxious at all?
Right. So from what I gathered, I don't know, a lot of the students were like, well, if we're going to get it, we're going to get it, whatever. In the summertime, it was a little bit weird just because there weren't as many like younger people that we knew getting it. But then once like the school started I felt like the entire population of like the university got it in August. Then it was like, people were freaked out at first, I would say, like at the beginning of the year. But after people got it, they were like, I got it. I'm just going to forget about it. We're just going to move on. So it's been interesting. And I just think people are kind of bored of everything, I'd say.
Have students in your experience been keeping up with the safety measures, masking up and maintaining social distance, or does that vary a great deal from person to person?
It definitely varies a great deal. I've met people all over the place, or I know all people who are like very, very cautious. And I know people who go, out to the bars when they get the chance. So it definitely varies.
Yeah. How did this impact your learning this semester, Hannah?
Yeah, so all of my classes are online, and kind of the biggest, like the hardest thing for me has been watching lectures online. It sucks. I hate watching lectures, and it's hard when, you have to do it on your own time. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to fall behind, and I feel like I'm maybe not getting the depth of like the learning that I do when things are in person and you can actually go to lecture.
Yeah, I bet you the campus there at the University of Iowa must just feel vastly different than in 2019.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like completely dead. There's no one on campus. And, you know, it's very isolating, I'd say, because no one wants to be next to each other. So everyone's keeping their distance, wearing masks all the time. And so it's just like, it feels less of a community, but it has to right
Yeah.
now.
Right, it sure does, Hannah. And to wind up here, so now you've had COVID, you've recovered from your symptoms. We assume you have antibodies and should be immune, right? For a few months.
I got a antibody test actually recently, a couple weeks ago, and I do have the antibody, so that's good.
Very good. Well, give us your outlook for the future, for the rest of this year, heading in to the holiday season and into 2021. What are your thoughts, Hannah?
So I think things are kind of bad at the moment, and I think things may get a little worse during the holiday season, with people like traveling a lot, but I'm hoping things don't get too much worse. And I do think that spring semester is probably going to be pretty much the same as this semester, but I do have hope for after this year that like the summertime and the next fall, things are going to be looking up, and hopefully we'll be getting a vaccine going. And so I do have hope for like the last half of 2021, I'd
All right. Hannah, it's been nice
say.
talking with you. Good luck with the rest of your studies there at the University of Iowa. Hannah Neary, a junior from Des Moines, the University of Iowa. Take care, Hannah.
Thank you so much.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, surveying how higher education in Iowa has been coping with COVID as we end this academic semester. Let's check in with another college student, one we've spoken with before on this program. Kylie Hauter is with us. She's a student at Iowa State University. Kylie, are you there?
Hi, yeah, I'm here.
Hi, we spoke with you at the end of August. And to make sure we're all up to speed on that, are you in Minnesota studying remotely, right? Still?
Yes, so all my classes are online.
Okay, so we just heard from a University of Iowa student, Hannah Neary, who contracted COVID-19 while living in an apartment with several other students in Iowa City. Remind us why you left the ISU campus to get your instruction very early on, right?
Yeah, so one of my roommates actually tested positive for COVID, and I'm really high risk. So I have a weakened immune system and chronic bronchitis. Two things that make COVID very not fun if I were to get it. And so she tested positive, and once I got my negative test, I was like, I'm going home. This is too much.
Right. So you're with your parents in, is it Eden Prairie, Minnesota?
Yes.
Okay. How has it been like? What's it been like the whole semester practically learning online? How is that compared to in-person instruction?
It was definitely difficult. I'm kind of a perfectionist, so, you know, I've always been a straight A student, and that didn't happen this semester. And it was just a really big adjustment. And, you know, it's no fault of the professors. This is a huge adjustment for everybody involved. And I just think the quality of education that you can get online just isn't what it is in the classroom. And that's unfortunately just something that we have to deal with right now.
And so it's not a matter of adapting to it. You just think it cannot have the potential ever of matching the effectiveness of in-person learning.
Yeah, at least for me, that's definitely the case. I'm much more of like an in-person, hands-on learner. And so having to do that online, you know, watching online lectures, doing homework and texts or tests, everything online was really, really a difficult adjustment for me.
All right. As I remember, you've been studying, you're majoring in journalism, political science, and you also, I believe, continue to work as the news editor for the ISU student paper.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So from afar, you've been able to keep your finger on the pulse of the ISU campus. What can you tell us about how the campus has fared through this semester with COVID? What have you been reporting on there?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the semester, the cases really, really jumped up. Iowa State has this thing called 801 Day, which is like the big back to school kind of party day, and hundreds of students participated in that. And so our cases immediately just spiked up at the beginning of the semester. And we got a very strongly worded email from President Winterstein, you know, being like, you are going to go home if this continues. So after that, the cases kind of started to drop. They didn't drop to zero, but they definitely dropped. And then when Governor Reynolds closed the bars as well, that had a significant impact on the number of cases that we saw. And then when they opened again towards the end of October, you know, Halloween, then our cases jumped up again. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, we've seen these jumps in cases coincide with, oh, when the bars are open, oh, when are the big party days, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, okay, so that's an echo of what we heard from Iowa City. The University of Iowa is actually the governor's policies help or hinder the public universities keep students safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on how well ISU or perhaps the reporting through the newspaper has been handling the pandemic? Could things have been done better by the ISU administration? We heard they're very transparent, have been very transparent from Vanessa Miller about sharing information, the data.
Yes. Yeah. So I actually am the main editor kind of in charge of all the COVID stuff for the Iowa State Daily. So I've had a lot of communication with the university about this, and I've been really, really impressed at that transparency that we've been seeing. I mean, at the beginning of the semester, I was worried, not necessarily because of anything they did, but just because it was a messy situation. But I have been really impressed with how the university has handled it and how they've been communicating. And also how President Winterstein has been pretty consistently communicating with the student body in her emails, telling us, you know, what we need to do, how we need to keep being safe and keep really, really trying to keep everybody healthy.
Right. We have just a minute left before we have to go to break. Cast your gaze forward to the next coming weeks into the spring semester. Is there a chance, perhaps, Kylie, you would return to the ISU campus for the spring semester?
Yeah, so I actually will be living in a single-bedroom apartment next semester. I have a class on campus, so I am very excited but very nervous. You know, I'm excited to get back on campus and kind of get a little bit of a sense of normalcy, but definitely concerned, and I just really hope that things can slow down a little bit by then and that we can all stay safe.
Right, and we'll see where we are progressing in terms of vaccinations before we get into 2021. Kylie, thank you for checking in with us again. We wish you all the best. Stay safe, and we look forward to you returning to the ISU campus.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, Jonathan Brand of Cornell College in Mount Vernon, the president there, how that private college with an alternative approach to class scheduling fair during this semester. That's in our second half hour. Also, we'll finish up with Professor Carissa Froyum of the University of Northern Iowa. She'll tell us how that Cedar Falls campus has fared. Our survey of Iowa higher ed during COVID continues after a short break. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Once upon a midnight weary, artists of Iowa discovered something quite dreary. In a pandemic year, an evil villain is out to steal the holiday cheer.
No live entertainment? Get out! No way! I'll save it myself if I have to. I'll do it today.
Join Iowa Public Radio Studio One and XBK for The Holiday Special, an original musical for a pandemic year, at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, as the fall academic semester ends, getting a sense of how higher ed in Iowa has been handling the pandemic. Last half hour, if you were with us, you heard we heard from students at Iowa State University and the University of Iowa. Let's start this hour, half hour, by talking with Jonathan Brand, president of Cornell College. President Brand, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Ben.
And it's been about almost exactly a year since we last spoke in much more normal times in November of 2019. Where are you in your semester right now? Because some higher ed has finished up. You have this 10-block schedule. You're going to finish up just before Christmas. Is that right?
Correct. We have 2 weeks and one day to go before we finish our fall term and go on to break.
Okay. Give us a sense of what your biggest current challenges are. Of course, that spike we had starting in the beginning of November, very worrying. How did you react to that on campus? How much did it affect you?
Right. Well, so we had the beginning of our year was incredibly positive and encouraging in that we went almost 2 months with fewer than 10 students testing positive. I mean, we had a very low positivity rate. In late October, I suppose, early November, we had a short, rapid increase, small increase, but it was enough to concern us because, you know, once it gets out of hand anywhere in this country, it's very hard to bring it back in. So we enhanced, strengthened, provided expanded testing on campus. We implemented a few additional rules in the residence halls related to our students. We suspended music and athletic practices for a period because at the end of the day, we had to make sure that we could minimize the risk to our students. And thankfully, our students and faculty and staff really heeded the you know, they were very compliant. And we went into Thanksgiving, a week before Thanksgiving, we had a zero positivity rate on campus among our students.
Well, congratulations on that. I imagine it wasn't, these new restrictions were quite a difference for your students, I imagine. The students were only allowed to leave their residence hall to attend class, pick up a meal, study in the library, participate in some testing or exercise. So it was quite a dramatic difference. And I understand from reporting that there was some pushback there. How big of a challenge was that to get students to recognize the seriousness of the situation?
So I would expect on any college campus that students would feel free to speak their minds, as our students do and should. Actually, it was helpful to have conversations with students. I think, by and large, as evidenced by the dramatic drop in our positivity rates, that our students, they listened and they were willing to make some of these additional sacrifices in the name of our campus community and the safety of the campus community. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. I mean, right. There's no doubt about it. The fundamental pieces of a collegiate experience, you know, being able to go into each other's residence halls and talk and chat into the wee hours of the evening. These are experiences that our students have to largely put to the side for, you know, until we're past this virus.
How many students, or did you have students who just at that point said, this is too many restrictions, I'm better off leaving campus to study remotely? Was that an option? Did students take that option?
This has been an option for our students the entire year. And this is us sort of proverbially leaning into the block system, which is, for us, the question really hasn't been, what will it take to bring our students back to campus sooner? It was, what are the conditions that we need to have in place so that our students can decide every block, every week even, whether they wish to be on campus or not? And with over 90% of our courses available in a virtual format, and most of those courses also being available in an in-person format, we really wanted to leave it to our students. I thought our obligation was to do everything in our power to ensure that our students, you know, again, that we would be minimizing risk for our students and maximizing safety. And when I look at the COVID rates around the country, I can comfortably say on average, there's probably no safer place for our students to be than on our campus right now.
Mm-hmm. With those increased restrictions that came with the statewide surge there, and you had as you pointed out, a really nice record there at the beginning of the semester, then we had this uptick here. The restrictions there, quite a difference for your students. I wonder, how serious were the mental health aspects of those new restrictions, the dealing with the isolation that necessarily comes with, you know, only going out of your dorm room at certain times?
Yeah. I think that's a great point, a great question, and a great issue in that I think it is a hugely difficult part of the equation. And I realize this, that if you are a student and you're in one of these traditional two-person residence hall rooms, being told that, and you don't have COVID, but you actually still have to quarantine because you might be a close contact to somebody who has COVID, to be told that you have to stay in your room for 14 days in a residence hall room, yeah, that's hard. That's really hard. And we tried to use that in a way of explaining to our students, this is why it's important that you follow the rules around COVID, so that you don't have friends or so that you yourself do not have to be in a residence hall room for 2 weeks. I mean, yeah, it sounds very difficult, and we know it is. And we had some really beautiful weather during that sort of rapid increase in late October, early November, and it was very hard to know that the best that students could do would be to open up the windows in their halls, in their rooms, and take a nice deep breath of that warm sunshine air.
All right. How did this curtail your normal actions? Because you're a very hands-on president seen around the campus. We talked last time about the purple chucks, the purple tennis shoes you're known for wearing around campus.
Yeah.
It limited you. Your style of presidency is limited by this, as the students were as well.
It has. I mean, I still walk with my border collie mix, just like your dog.
Yes.
On campus and with a mask and with my wife, and it's a real pleasure to see students at a distance in that manner. I was fortunate in that I was able to play a cameo role in a theater production, again, being done virtually. I'm teaching this block right now, so I'm getting sort of a first-hand experience of teaching and learning with COVID. So it's true. There are no athletic events to go to. There are no musical performances to enjoy right now in person. But I still try to be around our students and faculty and staff at a distance and via Zoom, so we can still share in the joy of the educational experience on campus.
President Brand, when you look forward to the end of this block and the coming semester, we have our vaccine on the horizon. Hopefully, we just don't know exactly when this dreaded pandemic will fade and go away. What are your plans into the future for the college?
Well, we're going to continue the policies and the rules that we've implemented, and we know that the next couple months, the winter months, will be probably the most challenging in the country. And so we will continue on the path that we are on. We have the luxury of being able to test our students, faculty, and staff. We have ample testing. We have the equipment. We have the room, the testing room to do it. And our students get the results in under 30 minutes. So we will enhance our testing when students leave for the holidays, come back from the holidays, before spring break, after spring break. Yep. And all while that's happening, we will prepare, like everyone else, to get our students and faculty and staff to have the vaccine available to them the second it's available.
Right. And we know hindsight is 2020, but and so I wonder, with this hindsight on this semester nearly, are there things that you would say, oh, I learned something there as the president of this college? I would do it differently next time.
I don't think so. I think in hindsight, looking back, I know that there was a period we did so well for the first 2 months that I suppose some way to communicate the importance of continuing our policy, following our rules and our procedures and our protocols, somehow just sort of, I suppose, motivating everyone to redouble their efforts just a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But by and large, I don't think our fall semester, our fall term could have really gone much better. It went as we had expected, maybe even a hair better, believe it or not.
Hmm. When we return to some sense of normalcy in the coming months in 2021, what have you most missed because of the pandemic this year that you will be really glad to get back to?
Oh, I think being in a classroom with students, being in a music and a theater with our students, seeing them running up and down the pedestrian mall in the middle of our campus, hugging each other and saying hello. the rhythm of the campus, the college experiences, I'm looking forward to that returning. It's still here. The magic is still here, but without the students sort of running around with each other and the joy of being on campus together, that's really what I miss, and I think a lot of us miss.
Okay. Jonathan Brand has been president of Cornell College since 2011, and we will check in with you next year, and hopefully many of the wonderful visions you just painted for us will have taken place in a safe manner. Jonathan Brand, President Brand, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben. Always great to talk.
Appreciate it. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, let's finish up this hour, this survey of how higher ed in Iowa is doing under these pandemic conditions by going to the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. Carissa Froyum has been with us before. She's a professor of sociology at UNI, also vice president of United Faculty AAUP Union at UNI. We last spoke with Carissa on this program in August. Carissa, welcome to the program.
So happy to be back with you at the end of the semester.
Yes, that's why we're checking back in with you, of course. Your semester of classes ended, right? Just so we make sure we're understanding this, you're different than Cornell College. You ended before Thanksgiving. You didn't want students to go away for Thanksgiving, then return from wherever, possibly to spread the virus, right? That's the thing.
That's absolutely right. Yep, we moved our semester up a week, shortened it a week, and then ended with finals Thanksgiving week.
Okay, so now you've got some hindsight. How did the plans put into place at the start of the semester work out? I'm sure there were some adjustments. You had a plan going in. You had the summer to think about it after this thing came down on us in the spring, and people had to just scramble to make whatever you could out of the spring semester. You had some time to think. The fall semester, that plan going in, did it run more or less smoothly from the start?
It ran much more smoothly than in the spring, for surely, and I think it ran more smoothly than a lot of people even anticipated. Of course, there were lots of bumps. About week three, we had a major shifting of classroom spaces, so my classes had adjusted to new rooms that were large because, of course, we don't have a large amount of large capacity classrooms on our campus.
Yep.
And my classes had shifted to those bigger rooms. And then, you know, week three, we actually shifted classrooms again to increase the social distancing of students and reduce the number of contacts. So I actually moved to a non-classroom that had no board, the computer in the corner, and those sorts of things. I think the most difficult thing has been for people who've been teaching on in person, but also simultaneously having to deal with students in and out of the classroom. So most of our classes have been in person. I taught in person all semester long. But every time a student would go into quarantine, of course, they would no longer be in the classroom. Mm. So we had to deal with a rotating cast of students in and out of the classroom all semester. And that was definitely the most difficult part.
Okay, so you had students rotating in and out depending on if they were in quarantine. And a quarantine could be someone testing positive for COVID or perhaps having close contact with someone who has tested positive. So
there are
different reasons for quarantine here. Also, other faculty that you're aware of that had to quarantine or were infected?
Yes. I mean, certainly some. I think fewer than we were fearing, of course. We had really high infection rates at the end of the semester while the state football tournament was being hosted at UNI. And I think our students by that point were quite exhausted and extremely stressed and really running into the mental health challenges. And our faculty were experiencing the same thing. So we'd made it through the semester. It was kind of chaotic. Every semester has an ebb and flow to it. And at the end, the virus was spiking locally again, and that was really challenging for faculty and students alike.
Mm-hmm. How does this change the instruction, the learning experience for the students? We have these socially distanced, you said a non-classroom, so you've got these large amounts of space, people having to have at least, 6 feet between everyone there to make sure that we're not in anybody's, viruses potentially there. How does that change the learning experience?
Well, my classes are very much activity-oriented and engagement-oriented and discussion and small group-oriented. So everything had to be arranged. For example, I do a game that illustrates some sociological ideas using Monopoly. Well, I can't have my students in groups playing Monopoly. So I had to reformat that entire lesson so they would do something virtually and then come together in the classroom and discuss it. Part of what I did was I set up groups in the beginning of the semester so students would have a consistent group of contact in the class because, of course, they're stuck in a single seat and can't move around the classroom. And so a lot of the changes were made in the organization of the class, I would say, and then facilitating discussion with masked students who are socially distanced, which was definitely a challenge throughout the entire semester. And then, you know, with people coming and going in and out of the room, one of the other challenges lots of faculty faced was for people who were teaching in person, some of them also live Zoomed class simultaneously. Oh. So they had students out, students live Zooming into class, and then students in person, and they were teaching all three ways simultaneously.
That's a technical feat. Congratulations to those who pulled that off.
I didn't do that, but lots of my colleagues did, and it was a challenge, to say the least. Now we have our feet wet, and we know we have learned some lessons for Shirley about how to organize classes going forward.
Okay, you've given us a good picture of how that the faculty view is. What have you heard from students? What have them been their reactions, their challenges, as far as you can tell?
Yeah, my students tell me that they want to be in person, but definitely by the end of the semester, there was a lot of lower attendance, and this was an issue across a lot of classes on campus. And so there was sort of this expectation. Of course, we expect our students to come to class and participate, but when you have students in and out, people sick, not sick, it really changes the dynamic of the classroom, and students struggled with that. Our students many of them were also learning online for other classes, and so it was a juggle. It was juggling for them, and they were stressed. My students, by the end of the semester, definitely were struggling with mental health issues. The mental health issues cannot be overstated. They are a real challenge on campuses right now.
Right. And describe that a little bit more for those who maybe haven't been part of a college atmosphere, what these young people were expecting and what they ran into in terms of isolation and why that would dent your mental health in a big way.
Yeah. And keep in mind that a lot of our students work throughout the community and in a lot of frontline work. So they work in retail places, they work in nursing homes. Our students work a lot on top of going to class. So they're simultaneously juggling five classes, some in person, some online, rotating calendars, you know, people organizing classes in different ways. Plus their life outside of UNI, their work life where, you know, they're potentially being exposed in the community. And on top of the disruption of all of the regular social and extracurricular activities on campus. And frankly, they're tired of sitting in front of computers. It's a totally different animal to be learning on a computer all day long than it is to be in person, in groups, building relationships with people. And I'm a sociologist. Those relationships are really critical to learning. We've had to be creative, but it has taken a toll on these students. And so it's the social isolation, but also the competing demands and the economic uncertainty that they're facing while they graduate. On top of, you know, they're 18. They don't have 40 years of life experience to depend on to make it through a pandemic.
Right. And This the economic impact of this pandemic has put our economy in an accelerator in terms of how fast the change is coming in many ways.
Yep.
What are your thoughts about the, we have a minute or so left, your thoughts about the long-term impact on this generation of college students?
I'm worried about them. I'm actually more worried about the college student age than my kids who are elementary and middle school aged because of the their isolation and their inability to create those social and professional networking relationships that are so critical, especially when you get out of the university. So we have a generation of students who have now lived through two semesters of chaos and uncertainty on top of mental health and physical health concerns of themselves, and they are going to need to be resilient moving forward.
Right, right. And yeah. And before we say goodbye, there seems to be an obvious silver lining in that we overcome adversity, and this was a real surprise. And to to have that as an achievement that we can all look back on, right?
Yeah, and you know, it reminds me of my grandparents' generation, right, in the 1920s and what they have lived through in their lives. This generation is going to have a story to tell to their grandchildren about what they have overcome.
Very good. Carissa Froyam, thank you very much for letting us check in with you again, professor of sociology at the University of Northern Iowa. So good to hear that, for the most part, it went well there with you and your students and fellow faculty.
Yes, thanks for having me back.
Okay, thank you very much. Tomorrow on the program, we'll get analysis of foreign policy, the present and the future, with President-elect Joe Biden, analysis from Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College and Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. River to River, produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.